This is lesson number 48 in our ecclesiology course. And incidentally, this will be the last of the lessons in which you'll be using my personal notes in the area of ecclesiology. From this point forward, I'll be recommending for you some books upon which you'll make reports and some various discussions upon which I'll be seeking your input. Perhaps some papers where you'll be writing theses on various subjects with your own research and bibliographies. But in any event, I'll be ceasing my portion of the ecclesiology course. I don't want everything that you are exposed to in the area of ecclesiology or everything that you're exposed to in any of the other areas to come totally from me. So I believe that these 48 lessons are sufficient, and we'll be going in a different direction from this point forward. This last lesson in the middle of this semester, this 48th lesson in our series on ecclesiology, will have for its subject auxiliary organizations and ministries of the church. Now, I have for recommended reading 1 Timothy chapter number 1, verses 1 through 7, and 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 16. It is fairly obvious, I'm sure, to all of you that it would not be wise at all for me to start the lesson by reading the totality of that scripture, because we'd be reading about 2.5 chapters of scripture. I do, however, want to read for you from the first chapter of the book of 1 Timothy, beginning to read with verse number 1 and reading down through verse 7. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the commandment of God our Savior and the Lord Jesus Christ, which is our hope. Unto Timothy, my own son in the faith, grace, mercy, and peace from God our Father and Jesus Christ our Lord. As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went to Macedonia, that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which minister questions rather than godly edifying, which is in faith, so do. Now the end of the commandment of charity, out of a pure heart, and of good conscience, and of faith unfeigned, from which some have turned aside into vain jangling, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say, nor whereof they affirm. Now the apostle is very clearly setting before us his reason for leaving Timothy in Ephesus, and of course that reason was to set in order some various things in the churches and to be sure that the people there did not turn aside to vain jangling and to improper conduct. And of course, as we read 1 Timothy chapter number 2 and chapter number 3, you'll find considerable guidance. The second chapter has 15 verses, the third chapter 16 verses, and essentially all of them are dealing with church order. And the reading of those will help you considerably in underscoring the basic things that I want to set before you. Time will not permit a great deal of biblical application in this, because the lesson is intended to be very practical, and very practical advice to you, especially if you're a young preacher or a young man who intends one day to be a pastor. I hope I may be able to give you some advice that will come from several years of experience. I've had 25 years of the pastorate in the church that I now pastor, plus over 25 years, plus the fact that I have been in many, many churches across the country, in many states, from one side of the country to another, where there's been harmony, and churches where there's been trouble, churches where the pastor has been the pastor and the church has been going forward, and churches where the pastor was not the pastor and the church is in all kind of trouble. And I know something of the varying problems and the apparent cause of those problems in different churches. And so it's from that standpoint that I would like to give you a little bit of guidance, and then along with that, give biblical application as to what seems to me to be proper as far as auxiliary organizations and ministries within the church. Now, as you begin to talk to the average Christian today about the goals of his church and the intention and direction of his church, we'll find that many of the purposes and methods are looked at from an intellectual standpoint, that is, a practical standpoint, far more than a biblical standpoint. And not only that, but you'll find that in many cases that their personal taste may be a much larger factor in guidance than will be their real intellect. That is to say, that when you begin to say, do you think this is the best way to do it, in many cases they'll say, well, we really hadn't thought that much about what the best way is, to say nothing of the biblical way. This is just the way we like to do it. We've done it this way. We like to do it this way. The ladies of the church like it this way. The men of the church like it this way. Our young people like it this way. In many instances, taste goes far beyond any question, either intellectually or biblically, as far as what is right is concerned. Now, once we give way to such order as that is the order of our own personal taste over that which is practical, and that which is practical over that which is biblical, there's no question that error of the worst sort has to follow. This problem manifests itself very greatly in the internal and external auxiliary ministries of the church today. In other words, many of the things that the church is doing today, they would not even try to defend themselves scripturally. It just seems to be practical. And to go a step further than that, many of them, they would not try to defend from a practical standpoint. It is just the way they like to do it. Now, I'm going to give you a categorization of these ministries, and then I'm going to deal briefly with four points that I hope will help you. And I do not intend, and I do not even desire, to direct your ministry or your practices merely from the standpoint of what Forrest Keener says. That's not proper. I don't want to do that. What I would like to do is to give you some things to think about. I'm going to state these things as if I knew that they were so. I believe them to be true. So I'm going to state them in a very dogmatic fashion. But, and you should not necessarily receive them simply because I've said so. What you should do is to search them out and to see from the Scripture what you can learn, and then to see the implications and the ramifications of many of these various ministries and what they actually do. The categorization then of them will be in four different divisions, and so far as I'm concerned, only one of those divisions is proper. First of all, there are ministries which are not of any particular local church. It's called the Lord's work, but it is not affiliated with nor under the surveillance of any particular local church. I consider that to be wrong. Secondly, there are ministries which are external in structure, but supposedly delegated by churches. That is to say that the church really does not make decisions as such. The church does not make determinations as such that direct that ministry. They supposedly delegate the authority in that particular area, such as in missions or education, to this outside or external ministry, and they say, we have given them that authority. Thirdly, ministries within, but not controlled by a local church. Now, these ministries are in the church, and they are genuine ministries, and then they are proper ministries as far as the ministry is concerned, but the church really has no control over them. There's someone in the church that handles them without the church's control in any real sense. And finally, the fourth, and what I consider to be the only proper format for any of these ministries, are ministries that are within the church, authored by the church, and controlled by the local church. Now, I don't find any other pattern in the Bible. We definitely find that pattern, that God has given authority to His church. He has given a commission to His church, and that commission supposes certain authority. So far as I can tell, He has never given authority to His church to delegate that to anyone else. He simply has not told us we may do that. Now, having mentioned then those four categories of ministries, and three of them being external and I think improper, or one of them internal and improper, and one of them internal and proper, Let me first of all then mention ministries which are not of any particular local church. What kind of ministries, what kind of activities am I talking about here? What kind of religious conduct or religious endeavor would fall into this category? Well, there would be evangelistic associations, such as Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, the James Robinson Evangelistic Association, the Jimmy Swaggart Evangelistic Association. A good illustration of what can happen in those areas has indeed happened in the James Robinson camp. As most of you know, he was a Southern Baptist evangelist. He was the fair-haired boy among the Southern Baptists, a good speaker, brought some really fine messages on many, many subjects. And then all of a sudden, James Robinson goes charismatic. Now, he changed churches, of course, but the fact of the matter is that the James Robinson crusades and the James Robinson ministry, the Evangelistic Association of James Robinson, went right on under a charismatic canopy, because the fact of the matter is it was not under the control of any local church. And the church of which he was a member, I believe it was the First Baptist Church in Euless, Texas, I'm not sure, but they couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't stop him from doing that. They couldn't stop him from taking the assets and the abilities and the name, et cetera, of that ministry and going in any heretical direction he wanted to go, because it was never under that church at all. Of course, there's the Jimmy Swaggart Evangelistic Association, and in many instances we find the government investigating these different groups because of strange ways of operation and strange things that are taking place financially, and nobody has any control over that except those people. Now, those are ministries which are not under any particular local church. Others are personal radio and television broadcasts, mail order services and institutions, which are not under any church. In other words, the person has his own, he may give it some kind of a high-sounding religious name, but in reality, it is a personally owned and personally operated television broadcast or radio broadcast or mail order ministry or institute of some sort. And this person operates it strictly as a business. He is an individual who makes the decisions. And I've known of several cases where some of these religious institutions had boards of directors. You get a letter from some of these guys and you have the listing of the board of directors, and you begin to look down through that board of directors and you realize that they never function one bit in any way concerning that. This person has simply gotten them to consent to be on his board of directors, and what he has done in many cases is to borrow a large name, a well-known name, in order to give credibility to his own organization, and he operates it as an individual business, and they have nothing to do with it. There are independent preachers who do this as ministers, independent missionaries on foreign fields and on local fields. There are rescue missions, coffee houses, tract distributors, Bible clubs, and on and on and on we could go. Different kind of ministries or organizations with a religious direction, with religious goals and so on, but they are not under any church at all. Now, all of these that I've mentioned are legitimate endeavors. Now, I do not mean all of them are legitimate organizations. I hope you don't confuse what I'm saying there. In other words, I don't believe that the evangelistic associations outside of the church are at all legitimate organizations. However, evangelism, which is what they set out to do, whether they're doing it right or not is another question, but at least they're professedly involved in evangelism, and that certainly is a proper ministry. Radio broadcast, television broadcast, mail order institutes, tract distribution, I won't say that all of these things are proper, but at least those that I've mentioned, and of course preachers all over the country, missionaries around the world, and I think even rescue missions under the right format and so on. I definitely feel tract distribution. All of those things are legitimate endeavors. The problem is not whether or not they are a legitimate endeavor. The problem is whether or not they are legitimate as they are functioning. In other words, if they were rightly established and rightly conducted, yes, they would be legitimate. But under these circumstances, it becomes very, very questionable. When conducted outside of the control of the local church, I am totally persuaded that they are not legitimate. First of all, they are illegitimate in the sense that they have no right to exist in God's world. Now, that may sound like a strange statement to you when I say no right to exist in God's world. But the fact of the matter is that we need to do everything with respect to the fact that we are living in and operating in God's world. This world belongs to God. It's His property. The church has the right to function and to operate because God has built the church. He has commissioned the church. He has told them what to do, and therefore they have that right to operate. They have the authority to operate in God's world. When you knock on the door of an individual in visitation representing your church, if it is a Bible-preaching, Bible-believing, gospel-preaching church, when you knock on a door and someone says, "Who gave you the right to knock on my door?" you can answer, "God did." It doesn't mean that you have the right to infringe upon His property or anything of that sort and to say, well, you know, and to be abusive or something of that sort. But he says, well, whoever gave you the idea that you had the right to come here and to knock upon my... God did. God did. God has said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. But He said it to His church. Now, the point is this, that these organizations outside of this canopy of operation, so far as I'm concerned, have no right to exist in God's world. Secondly, they are illegitimate in their conduct of operation. In other words, even though the basic goal that they professedly have may be right, they do not have a right to operate with that as a goal in God's world, and the very conduct of their operation, the way they're doing it, is absolutely illegitimate. Thirdly, it is certain to failure, even if it is a smashing success. Now you say, well, preacher, that sounds like a paradox if you say, even if it's a success, it's a failure. Well, a lot of things fail that do not fail in an obvious fashion. They may fail by default, or they may fail by deflection. Now, by that I mean to say that these things may fail because God does not bless them, and they're not well enough organized to get by without the blessing of God, and they may fail like someone's business would fail and come to naught. On the other hand, they may not fail that way. In some instances, they are very successful in that sense. They continue to go on and they're very successful in that sense, and yet they indeed do fail because they are deflected from the basic direction of operation and conduct that pleases God. And though they continue to operate, they always operate in a wrong fashion, and indeed they would be better off if they died. I heard a man say some years ago that many of these super church organizations are dead, but they're too rich to bury. What he was teaching in reality was that many of those institutions were out of order, that they didn't really have a right to exist, but that there was so much money committed to them, and they were so well off that they, in reality, could not be buried. And he was right. He could not have been more right. The only problem is, so far as I can tell, his organization would come under the very same category of conduct. In other words, even though he may be a smashing success, as far as the world is concerned, he is a failure because he is deflected from God's way of doing things, and ultimately it'll involve in a deflection from God's truth. Now, the second thing that we want you to see in this is the principle of this so-called delegated but external ministries. By that, of course, we mean those ministries that some organization, which is not a church, is carrying out And if you were to say to them, are you doing the Lord's work? They would say yes. Are you doing the work of the church? They would say yes. Are you a church? No. How is it then that you're doing the work that God gave the church to do? And the answer would come back something like this. Well, they have delegated this ministry to us. It is their ministry. We're carrying it out. But they have given this authority to us to do this. Now, such ministries as this will include denominational or doctrinal associations, such as the Southern Baptist Convention, the World Baptist Fellowship, the Baptist Bible Fellowship. Those of you who may not know, the Southern Baptist Convention is essentially headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee. The World Baptist Fellowship in Arlington, Texas. The Baptist Bible Fellowship in Springfield, Missouri. The ABA in Little Rock, Arkansas, and many, many, many others. There are just dozens of those that we could mention. Now, let me say this. I don't want you to think for one moment that I'm hinting that all of the men in these organizations are crooks or that they have some kind of a sinister plot to usurp the authority of the church, or that these men are men who are not interested in doing the work of God. Many, many of the men who work under the canopy of these organizations that I've mentioned do so at great personal expense. Many of them labor hours. I know, especially in the World Baptist Fellowship and the Baptist Bible Fellowship, I'm more familiar with them than I am with many of these others. Many of those men pastor their church. They are paid for pastoring their church. Their church does not require of them the efforts that they put forth in these fellowships, and yet they put in many, many hours of hard labor and sacrificial work, and they're doing so with the desire to serve God. We must, in all fairness, we must admit that that is the case. These men are not out to do something bad or something that is unscriptural or ungodly. As they are involving themselves in an association or a fellow, call it, really doesn't make one dime's worth of difference if you call it a fellowship, a convention, association, in all the same, it's doing the same thing. So there is that denominational or doctrinal association thing that's out there. Secondly, there is the multi-church educational institution, such as the Southern Baptist seminaries that you have all across the country, the Southern Baptist colleges, and so on. Many of these are operated essentially with money from the churches. And if you were to ask them where they get their authority, they would say, well, we got it from the churches. The churches have delegated this authority to us. Arlington Baptist College in Arlington, Texas, would essentially tell you the very same thing. The Baptist Bible College in Springfield, Missouri would claim the very same thing. We are only carrying out for the churches a ministry that they have delegated to us because we can do it better than they can do it. Pillsbury College, Cedarville College, and on and on and on and on we might go. Independent Baptist College in Dallas, Texas. Now, let me say this, that many of these would not go to the same degree that others have gone as far as feeling that they had strength and rights and so on. There would be many of those. But these are institutions operating with the idea of doing the Lord's work, with the idea of carrying out the Great Commission, who feel that they have their authority delegated by other churches or by a particular church. In some cases, such as in the case of the Independent Baptist College in Dallas, Texas, they are under the basic auspices of a particular local church. And they will tell you that they get their authority strictly from that local church. That's not exactly accurate because they do have a board of consultants. I don't think they call them directors, but they have a consulting board of other churches, and they listen to that board, and they make decisions in sensitivity to that board. It's not to say it's wrong, since they are indeed receiving money from those churches, but nevertheless, it's really the seedbed, it's the beginning of one of the things, just like the others that we have there. There, of course, there is the mission board type cooperative program involved in sending out missions. As the above things that I mentioned are educational institutions, we have the mission programs, that is the cooperating type of mission programs, such as the World Baptist Fellowship Mission Board, the Baptist Bible Fellowship International, Maranatha, Baptist Faith Missions, ABWE, BIMI, and on and on and on we could go. And there are many little mission boards that are started across the country with only two or three churches behind them. Some mission boards have been formed within a single church. Now, the point once again is this. None of these organizations were ever started to bootleg whiskey or to run slaves or to steal women or to kidnap babies or anything like that. They're there for the purpose of preaching the gospel. Their intention is not a bad intention. And again, I don't want you to think that the men who are involved in that are involved in it because they're making huge salaries by being involved. Many of those men operate within these boards and labor on those boards at great personal sacrifice to themselves. And so we mustn't take away from that. That doesn't make it right. The fact that they make the great personal sacrifice does not sanctify what's being done. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying that we will fool ourselves and we will not look at this rightly, we'll not approach it rightly if we come at it from a direction that implies that all of these men are crooks out to do the Lord's work damage. It's not the case at all. So we have that mission board type of cooperating programs that we've mentioned there. Now, first of all of these are, in their professed concept, servants of the church with authority delegated to them by the church. For instance, if you were to go to the World Baptist Fellowship Mission Board or the Baptist Bible Fellowship International Mission Board or Baptist Faith Missions, and I'm sure it would be true with ABWE and BIMI and many, many of the others, the ABA Mission Board and so on, that you'd find those men saying this: we do not have the authority at all, and we are in reality servants of the church. They have simply delegated this authority to us. They have in agreement decided that we as a group, as a mission board or so on, can in reality do this work better than they as an individual church. In other words, it is a composite effort of all of the churches, and we can do it better. Now let me say this, that there's a little bit of dishonesty in that whole idea that we are only that which has been delegated by the churches. Because in many, many instances, this organization started out and it was put together by a relatively small number of churches. And out of that grouping came other churches. In other words, they went out and started other churches under the canopy of that fellowship or mission board. And it therefore grew as an organization, became a larger organization. And in all reality, the churches that grew out of it grew up from the very beginning as its servants and to some extent in subjection to it. Nevertheless, they would claim that we are really servants of the church and our authority is delegated by the church. Now then, secondly, they all soon, in practice, become lords over the churches, siphoning off the life's blood and in reality controlling the churches. Now, I know a lot of preachers. I've been around a lot. And I know a lot of men who will loudly proclaim their independence. But I do not know one man who is closely affiliated with this type of an organization who will really exercise his independence. They're very, very sensitive to what their fellow workers believe. And I suppose under the format in which they operate, they should be. But I know that often these men make phone calls to other churches and other pastors and sometimes to mission boards and so on to get information which is to affect a decision which will be made supposedly by that local church. The fact of the matter is that those institutions do indeed usurp authority and exercise authority over that local church. Not only that, but they siphon off their life's blood. I don't know how many young men I've heard stand and testify that they owed everything they had as far as their ministry was concerned to the Baptist Bible College or Arlington Baptist College, and therefore they would never consider a ministry in which they did not support those colleges. The ironic thing about this is that those colleges within themselves have no funds, they have no educating ability, they have no staff, they have no students, they have nothing. All of those things come to them from the local churches. But who gets the credit for educating them, for giving them the free education or the inexpensive education or the sound education or the Bible education? It's invariably that school. It's never the local churches that carry the load of that school or who supposedly delegate their educational responsibility to that school. It is the school that gets the credit. And this is not only ironic, as far as I'm concerned, it's terribly, terribly wrong. And what happens is that these schools and these mission boards and so on siphon off the lifeblood of those churches, taking their best young men. And in reality, they soon become controlling factors of those churches. And no one will honestly deny that there is some control there. In some cases, they'll try to for a time. But when you begin to really probe and delve into it, you'll find that it cannot be denied. Thirdly, there are those internal ministries of the church, but they are uncontrolled. And I'll tell you what they are. You have such things as deacons' boards. The deacons have a meeting. They make decisions which are definitely to affect the church and which indeed do affect the church, without the church having any voice in that deacons' meeting as such. Now, the church may have a voice later on, but in many cases, the meeting of that deacons' board is going to dictate what the church's voice is going to be later on. The church has no input before the deacons meet. They have those meetings of that sort. Women's missionary unions, in many instances, though they are not organizations with stated authority, they have tremendous pressure upon the churches. Sometimes just the sowing circles or the committees that they will have in various churches. They appoint a committee to search something out, and that committee comes back, and even though I'm not against in every case a committee being appointed to do something, but in many instances, once that committee is appointed, that committee becomes the determining power of the church. In many cases, ladies' fellowships and men's fellowships will make decisions. They'll get together, you know, a half a dozen or a dozen or two dozen women or half the women of the church or a third of the women of the church, get together in a ladies' fellowship meeting, and they decide something the church ought to do. Maybe something that the church should buy or something the church should take on as a project or something the church should change. And that group of ladies decides that's the way it should be. They go back and they begin to talk to their husbands, and they begin to talk to other ladies in the church, and their husbands begin to talk to others. And the first thing you know, this thing is ramrodded through the church, in some cases railroaded through, so that something is done which actually is a result of a decision made in that ladies' fellowship. The same thing is true with men's fellowships. In many cases, they make decisions which affect all of the churches. I can remember times when our church, in the early years of it, before we became an independent Baptist church in reality, met together with a men's fellowship that involved our church and, I believe, five other churches. The basic purpose of that was the promotion of a youth camp. And there were decisions made and votes taken in that men's fellowship that dictated, in all reality, policies that the church would carry out, including the appropriation of money from those churches. And finally, the loss of the camp was really determined by a resolution passed in that men's fellowship. One man pulled a little shenanigan, and he actually managed to give that fellowship away to a board of directors which was outside of the group of churches that originally had owned it. And the decision was made without the vote of the churches at all, but merely by the vote of that composite group of men gathered together. It was as wrong, it was as unbiblical, it was as immoral It was as dishonest as it could be, and yet nobody really realized it. The reason they didn't realize it is because there was an uncontrolled ministry within the churches that was being allowed to operate, which never should have. The same thing extends itself into various auxiliaries, home Bible studies, youth groups, and on we could go. Groups that are within the church, but they are not the church. However, they make decisions. They are ministries that make decisions and function as ministries independent of the power of the church. Secondly, all of these in some capacity and structure may have a reason or a right to exist. I'm not hinting, and I don't want you to think I'm saying that there should be no such thing as deacons or sewing circles. I don't know what good sewing circles for if they don't sew. If they don't make quilts or something, you know. Committees and fellowships, etc. And I'm not knocking the home Bible studies as such. I'm simply saying that those are things that may indeed have a right to exist. The problem is when they affect, or when they enact, or when they usurp activities or policies of the church in general. In other words, they become the voice or the deciding power of the church, this little organization that is within the church. But in reality, it is not controlled by the church. It controls the church, or at least controls a particular activity of the church at that time. God is not pleased with that. It's wrong. Now, the solution is this. None of these, though they may have the right to exist, none of these should ever be allowed to be structured in such a way that they may either enact or think they may enact any of these things. They should not be allowed to be structured so that they may or think they may, first of all, make a decision for the church. I don't care if it's nothing except a day upon which the church is going to have a special meeting. Those little groups should not be allowed to make those decisions. They should be made by the church body. Secondly, they should never be allowed to or think they are allowed to conduct business relevant to the church. They have no right conducting business that is in any way related to the church. It'll cause trouble, it's improper, it's not good. Thirdly, they should never be allowed to or think they are allowed to become a voice for the church. That is to go away and say our church stands for this or our church stands for this or our church. They should never, as a group, be allowed to be a voice for the church. It's not right. They should never become a voice to the church. That is, that the church should never address themselves to, well, what did the men's fellowship think about this? What did the ladies' fellowship decide to do? That's out of order. Should not be. These are groups that are within the church, and they should be under the leadership of the church and not the church under their leadership. And then, as a body, they should never be allowed to influence policy of the church. By that I mean they should not be allowed to meet together. Say, for instance, the men's fellowship meets on Tuesday night, and they get together, and this men's fellowship discusses something. They decide the church, maybe the church needs to have a new gymnasium or a new auditorium or a new pool hall or whatever. And so they come back and they begin then, they decide, this group decides, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's talk that up in the church. And they begin then to go around to the other men in the church, to the women in the church, to the children. And when a vote finally comes to pass on this issue, it has in reality been decided and propelled by this auxiliary group within the church. And they have in reality made the decision, and they have brought the church to the point of following that decision, whether the church really wants it or not. Now then, fourthly, I want to talk to you about proper ministries and proper operation. And this becomes very simple. It's not that complex at all. Some of the proper auxiliary ministries of the church are this: radio and television ministries. Nothing wrong with that. That's good if a church can have a radio ministry, a television ministry, a mass way of reaching the world. That's great. That's wonderful. Foreign and local missionaries should be sent out. Certainly that is proper. Rescue missions under the right format are good ministries. military ministries, that is, ministries to the military, or benevolence ministries, simply ministering to the poor. Printing ministries and literature ministries, literature distribution, all of those things are proper. Special education organizations and programs, such as Christian schools in the church, Bible institutes in the church, even a Bible college in the church if they can make that operate, whatever they feel like that church can do. Those are proper auxiliary ministries. That is to say that they are ministries which are not necessarily carried out in the process of the church meeting for a normal periodic worship service. They are carried out in an auxiliary fashion. The key to those is this. The key to them being proper and the key to them staying proper is this. First of all, they are always to be under the authority and the surveillance of the local church. Now, we operate a pretty extensive printing ministry here at Bethel Baptist Church. But this printing ministry, even though the church obviously cannot look over the shoulders of the men that are doing the technical and the physical work on it all of the time, but the church constantly has the right to surveillance of this. And this printing ministry, in the process of doing anything, of making changes, building buildings, buying equipment, changing the basic operation, or anything of that sort, must come back to and get approval from the church. It must be under the authority and under the surveillance of the local church. Secondly, it must be financed by and financially subject to the church. Now, we can talk about something being under the surveillance and under the authority of the church, but this is a very good benchmark to see if it really is. Is the church financing it? Does the church hold the financial strings to it? For instance, they say, well, we delegated this to a fellowship over there. You delegated to the fellowship. Do you tell the fellowship how to spend their money? Do you stop them and start them? And no. If you don't, then you've not really delegated it. You've given it over to them, you see. Should be financed by and financially subject to that local church. And I don't mean a group of local churches, that local church. See, all policy decisions should be subject to the vote and the administrative principles of the local church. Now, this will afford biblical stability. And usually, if these organizations start out to operate under this format, when they begin to vary too far from a biblical mode of operation, they will become self-destructive, and of course that is the desirable direction for them to go. Instead of them being destructive to the Lord's principles of operation, they indeed underscore them. Thank you for your time in this series of lessons.